Years ago, when I was in college studying Russian, did you all know that about me, that I did that? I studied some Russian? Okay. So an opportunity came up. There was an organization called Russian Oregon Social Services, and I think we were required to do some sort of service in the community as part of the Russian degree, but this was an opportunity that came up, and so I jumped on it. And I was placed with a family that had recently immigrated to the United States, and I was there to help them learn English. That was my job. So once a week, I went to their home, and I sat with them at their kitchen table, and we just practiced. We practiced conversations. We read children's books. You know, I sort of tried to teach them vocabulary and some basic grammatical concepts. And it was a family of a woman who was in her 60s. Her name was Amelia, and her husband, Boris. And they had brought with them two adult sons, both of whom were married. And she had also brought with her aging mother, who was in her 90s at that point, and had a heart condition. She was very frail. And they were all living together in this very tiny two-bedroom apartment. And the sons had found work. Boris had been unable to find work at that point when I got there. They'd been in the States for maybe 2 months. And so that was my job. That was one of the things that I did, was I went every week to talk to them and to work with them and to teach English. That was what I was called to do. And so I was thinking about them as we are coming up on Thanksgiving, as we were talking about the book of Ruth. I had planned to talk about the chapter 2 of Ruth, which is after Naomi and Ruth have traversed the desert. You know, their whole lives have fallen apart. We learned last week their husbands died, Naomi's sons died, and so there's three women by themselves that don't have a place to live, don't have a means to support themselves, and they're very, very far from home. And so one of them goes back to her family, that's Orpah, and then Naomi and Ruth decide to throw in their lot together and head back towards Bethlehem, where they hear there might be some food and Naomi might have some distant relatives that might be able to help them. So that's where we ended last week. This week, we see what happens after they actually arrive. And it's a really interesting story because you see the plight. You see the plight of these women, and it covers several topics that are really relevant today and that we're talking about in this church. And after hearing President Obama's speech on immigration on Thursday, I thought this topic is still relevant because Ruth is a Moabite. She is a foreigner who comes to a new land after her whole life has fallen apart to try and make a better life for herself and to try and support an aging relative. And watching how she navigates that, how much she struggles, and what safety nets are in place in the law and in the society to help her with that, that's going to make or break her efforts, it's absolutely relevant to today. We see the topic of immigration, we see the topic of hunger, and we see the topic of helping the most vulnerable, the widow and the orphan, and dealing with women's issues in general, with women's rights and how they would have navigated that differently if they were men, all in one story. And this is just chapter 2. There's 2 more chapters after this. Two whole more chapters. And so as I was working with Amelia and her family and getting to know them, I got to see how the different people navigated this differently. Amelia saw this as a land of opportunities. And they all did when they first got here, but the realities on the ground were much different. Her sons had master's degrees in physics and engineering from top universities in Russia. But because of the language barrier when they got here, the only work they could find was janitorial. And it felt demoralizing to them that they had been working as professors and as scientists, but when they came to the United States, they could only have night shifts, which kept them away from their families, and that they just pushed a broom all day long instead of using the skills that they had developed in Russia. And watching them struggle with that, and as they got better at English, express their frustration. You know, and they said, one of them said, the worst word in the English language, the one that I hate the most, they said, is someday. Someday. Because every time I express to one of my colleagues, any time I express to one of the people that I meet, and when they express it to me, their frustration with being unable to reach the level they wanted to reach that they thought they were qualified to reach in this country, someone would say, well, if you keep working hard, then maybe someday, you'll be able to make a life for yourself the way you want. And they would get so angry He would get so angry. Boris, the husband, never actually reached that level. He was unwilling to work as a janitor. When he was in Russia, he had worked as a heavy equipment operator. He was certified to drive big rigs, to drive those gigantic tractors, to drive the big construction equipment. But when he came out here, in order to pass all of those licensing exams, and he had to do them all again, he had to be able to speak the language to pass the test, and he couldn't do it. And he got extremely, extremely frustrated. And he left. He left about 4 months after they got here. He left. He said, America is not all I thought it was cracked up to be. I'm going home. And we saw Amelia in a very similar situation to Ruth, in a completely foreign land, trying to support an aging relative, where her husband suddenly left. And she had her mother. I remember talking with her and having conversations with her and coaching her. She asked me to write it down very clearly. What do I say to the 911 operator? What is the number that I call? And what do I say so they understand my mother's heart is having trouble, if that should happen? These are the kinds of conversations we started having when we learned enough about each other that we could communicate and talk, and we got out of the children's books and started talking about life. So fortunately for Ruth, there were some safety nets involved. There were laws on the books about gleaning, and you see that. You see that she's allowed to glean and other young women are allowed to glean. We talked about how in the Bible the prescription is if you have 100 rows of wheat, that you would leave 10 of those rows for people like Ruth and like those other young women that might not have another way to sustain themselves. They get to go, after all the picking is done, they get to go behind the workers and pick up what's left over. But can you imagine that? Can you imagine going on the ground and picking up little bits of wheat that have fallen on the ground to try and make enough for you to eat and for your aging relative to eat? That's what she was doing. And we see she's fortunate in that she catches Boaz's eye, and Boaz is a kind and compassionate soul, and he notices her. And so he puts in additional safety nets. He tells the young men that are working in the field, you leave her alone. You don't know catcalling this lady. No whistling, no, you know, pinching or groping of the body parts. You leave her alone. And he says, and another thing, she doesn't have to glean after you. When you put your sheaves together, you know what sheaves are, when they bundle all the wheat and tie it so that it sits in a beautiful, you see these pictures of the sheaves. He said, pull out some handful of those and leave them next to the sheaves so she doesn't have to work so hard to pick them up individually. So he's giving her more, and he's being extra compassionate towards her. But she still is living day to day, trying to pick up her own food off the ground just as much as she can to feed two people. And so there's a safety net, but it's not a great safety net. It's enough to survive day to day to day, but it's really almost impossible for her to climb out of that and break that cycle. So one of the first things Amelia did after her husband left, it was interesting to watch how she blossomed. One of the first things she decided to do was learn how to drive. Because in Russia, she had never learned how to drive. Every time she mentioned it, her husband would tell her, you don't need to learn how to drive. Where do you need to go? You don't need to go anywhere. If there's some place you need to go, you let me know. And if I think it's appropriate, I will drive you there when it's convenient for me. And so when he left, she wanted to learn how to drive. And so this became my second task, besides teaching English, was to help Amelia get her driver's license. And so we practiced with the book, and we went to the DMV, and she took her test, and she was able to do that in English. It took her a long time. They gave her extra time, but she was able to do it. So she got her learner's permit, and then the two of us practiced driving together. That was one of the most harrowing. My children are approaching driving age in the next 4 or 5 years, and if it's anything like learning with Amelia, I'll probably just designate that task to somebody else, because Amelia was terrified that if there was another car on the road, she would hit it. And so we had to stick to residential streets, like way off the beaten path. And she would be okay. She would be driving. She would be focusing. And then another car 3 blocks away would turn the corner and start heading towards us. And she would start to panic. She would start, she'd start to breathe heavy. And she would stare at the car to make sure that she could see where it was, and then just veer to the right to get off the road. Every time. Car, and then we would just, one time we almost ended up on someone's front porch, I kid you not. She went up and over their lawn and was this close to their front steps before I was able to remember the Russian word for brake. And, you know, we had these adventures together. And then at a certain point, you know, my year or two with them came to an end, and I was finishing my degree and going off to do other things. And I lost touch with them. I lost touch with them, and I didn't get to hear what else happened with them. But I watched their struggle, and I watched as they progressed, as they were able to learn more and find more safety nets and get to know more people, how they moved closer and closer towards what could be a sustainable life for them. And when you look at the book of Ruth, you see that over the course of the four chapters. imagine a series of concentric circles, much like a target, with the promised land in the very center. And you see Ruth move. First, she's outside of the circle. She's a Moabite. She's out in the desert, in the wilderness. She's so far outside the circle. And then she comes in with Naomi, so she has someone else with her, and they come to Bethlehem. So then they're within this circle of the nation of Israel, right? And then they come a little closer. They come to the fields, which when you look at the layout of ancient cities in this area, the cities were in the center at the top of a hill. It was concentric circles. The city was at the top. That's where people lived and worked and kept their animals. And then in the next layer down the hill would be the threshing floors. This is where they would go together at harvest time and have all the barley on the floor, crunch it all up, and then winnow it, throw it up in the air, and the seeds fall down and the chaff disappears, and then they have the seed left over. So there's the threshing floors, and then outside of that is the field. So you see as she's moving closer, she's now in the fields. Do you see that? From the wilderness to within the land of Bethlehem to within the field. And then in chapter 3, she meets Boaz on the threshing floor. And eventually, the two of them get married, and she ends up in the city owning her own land, and she's right at the center. Do you see that? And watching Amelia and her family navigate this as they, you know, eliminated those barriers. First, the linguistic barrier. Then their own frustration barrier. Then learning the skills that they needed to learn to be independent, self-sufficient. How to call 911. How to navigate the bus system. How to take a driver's license exam. How to translate those degrees into certifications within the country. And so on and so forth. You watching how this family navigated their path to citizenship and to going from being an alien and a sojourner to a person at the center of society is very similar to watching Ruth as she struggles for day-to-day survival and then finds a way to be where she's not as worried about that. So there was a point where a man named Yevgeny Yevtushenko came to visit the university. Has anybody heard of Yevgeny Yevtushenko? I would be surprised if you have. Okay, Yevgeny Yevtushenko is a famous Russian poet and a social activist. I want you to imagine this guy is so big in Russia, so big. Imagine if you had Martin Luther King Jr. with all of his social activism, combined with John Lennon with all of his personality and all of his cultural status and all of his poetry. Put them together into one person. This is Yevgeny Yevtushenko. And he came to the Portland State University years ago. And now I could appreciate who this guy was, but I wasn't raised with him. I didn't watch him for 50 years. I didn't listen to his poetry the way we listen to John Lennon's music and listen to Martin Luther King Jr.'s speeches. And I knew that Amelia had. And so I called her up and I asked her if she would like to come with me because they were going to be having a poetry reading with him. And because I was part of the Russian class, we kind of had a special in, so I was able to get front row seats and this sort of stuff. And so I invited her to come, and we had this wonderful moment where she wasn't sure. You could tell she didn't feel comfortable. She didn't feel like she should be there. And I was just determined to get this woman an autograph and to get a picture with him and her together. That was my goal. And so as we're approaching, he's up on the stage, we're approaching the end of his presentation, I turned to her and I said, now listen, here's what's going to happen. After he's done, as soon as he's done, we're going to go this way, we're going to cut up the side aisle, we're going to rush the stage, and we're going to get a picture with him. This is another thing you probably didn't know about me. And he goes, and she goes, oh, no, we could never do that. I said, trust me, it's going to be fine. Just hold my hand. All you have to do is hold my hand, and we're going to go get it. And she was very hesitant. But as soon as it was over, I said, trust me. And I grabbed her, and we rushed out the seats, up the side aisle, because I knew everybody would go up to the center, and he was going to have his book signing afterwards, and then he'd be swamped. We rushed up the side aisle. As he's heading across the stage this way, we're coming up this way. We're probably about as far as I am from Lucinda right now. And so I shouted to him, Yevgeny Yevtushenko, can we take a picture with you? And he just kept on walking. I knew he could hear me. Right? Like when you tell your children, I said come back here and you need to pick up your, you know, they just keep walking. You know they can hear you. And he didn't stop walking. And then I said, Yevgeny Yevtushenko, I just want to shake your hand. He just kept on walking. I'm a big fan, I said. He kept on walking. I knew he could hear me. So I said, Yevgeny Yevtushenko, I just have to kiss you. And he said, oh, is someone calling my name? Did I hear something? So I ran up, grabbed him around one arm, told Amelia to come. She was still very hesitant. Told her to get in the picture, asked someone to take a picture. And the picture is a riot because it shows me sitting there going, I was like, I got him! And Amelia's sticking her head in, looking a little nervous, but definitely in the picture. And Yevgeny Yevtushenko is smiling with this look like, I feel like I just got... I just been had. And I did. I gave him a kiss on the cheek and let him go. And I did get an autographed copy of his book, too. One for her, one for me. And so we had these adventures together. But years later, now maybe 2 years later, Russian Oregon Social Services held a little dinner and asked some of the students that had helped with their program to come. And so I'm having this dinner and, you know, with all these people that I didn't know. And all of a sudden, they want to announce the Volunteer of the Year Award. And they asked me to come up, and they gave it to me. And it really surprised me, because I had just done what everybody else was doing. But the woman afterwards, I said, why did you give this to me? This makes no sense to me. All I did was tutor them English. That's what, you know, that's what we were asked to do. And she said, I don't think you realize what a difference you made. I don't think you realize how much more you did. And for me, I was just going through the motions, but I think that God was working through me to give them what they needed, because Amelia was learning skills. She had a safe place to fail. She had a safe place to drive up on somebody's porch, right? And we'd gotten to know one another. And when we look at Boaz, he says something very interesting when he talks to Ruth. You know, he blesses her. He knows how hard she's working to take care of her mother-in-law and take care of herself. He knows the tragedy in her life. He knows how hard she's working every day in the fields to just pick up little grains of wheat to be able to feed. And then she's got to go home, and she's got to sift all that out and process it so that she can actually make it edible. And then she's got to cook it before they can even eat it. He knows how hard she's working. And so he blesses her for that. He notices her for that. He knows her story. And he says to her, may God continue to bless you, the God under whose wings you have sought shelter and refuge, under whose wings. And that's an interesting image, this image of God's wings being a sheltering force, because we see it in Matthew. We see that God is trying to be like a mother hen with her brood, he says. Can you imagine, like, the people of Israel being like little chicks running everywhere? We had little chicks. We've raised chickens. We know how scattered they can be, and watching the mother hen trying to keep them all safe and keep them all sheltered and keep them all fed. So seeing God as a mother hen is a really interesting image, but that's the image we get here, is that she's coming for shelter. She's coming closer and closer and closer under that circle to find that shelter, to find that refuge, to find that sanctuary. And he recognizes that. And in the very next chapter, she comes to him and she says, would you throw your cloak over me? And we see the same image, except this time it's Boaz throwing that wing over her. And it's really important, because as we talk about prayer, as we talk about God working in people's lives, as we talk about miracles, as we talk about the way that God intervenes and has agency, 99% of the time it's through people. I mean, we see the image of manna raining down from heaven once, but we see the image of a prophet or a Boaz or a Jesus or a kind soul showing up and giving people food when they're hungry 99% of the time. We are the wings. We are the mother hens. We are the ones that are the agents of kindness, of compassion. And when Boaz says, you know, the wings under which you seek shelter, he's talking about God, but God is using him to make that effect. And he does. He goes, he takes more and more steps to help her get married and to help her have a baby and help her reclaim family land that was long lost and not claimed because no one was there to claim it. And she ends up being the great-great-grandmother of King David. So years later, I had to stop at the Jewish Community Center near my house in Portland, and I pulled up, and as I was getting out of the car, a woman got out of the car next to me. And guess who it was? It was Amelia. And she looked great. She looked fantastic. She was wearing nice clothes. She had her hair done up. She was wearing that really bright lipstick that she loved to wear. She tried to give some of it to me. It was called like Electric Raspberry. And she says, "Oh, put this on. Now you will look even more beautiful for the men." And it was glow in the dark. She was wearing her fabulous Electric Raspberry lipstick. And she was driving her own car. She was driving her own car. And she was there to pick up her grandchildren and other children, because she had started an in-home business of childcare and was supporting herself and her mother using the skills that she had learned. And I asked her, "How are your sons doing?" "They're doing well." They weren't top-notch scientists again, but they were doing well. They were no longer pushing brooms at midnight. They were doing other things. And I asked her, "Whatever happened to Boris?" And she goes, "Oh, Boris." She says, "You know, he went back to Russia for 3 months. And then he called her and said, you know, Russia's not all it's cracked up to be. I thought I'd come back and see you. Wouldn't you be happy to have me back?" And she said, "No, I think you'll be just fine. I think you'll be just fine." And she went on to get her driver's license and start her own business. And her mother was still alive and doing well and had health care. And they had enough to eat every day. They'd come to the United States looking for shelter under the wings of God. But it was all of the feathers were the different people in their lives that helped them get to that point. Their families, their friends, the laws, the social networks that we have and the social nets that we have in things like food stamps and Medicare and food pantries and low-income housing that helped them get to the point that they could get over that hump and be productive and be self-sufficient and be contributing members of society. Because all those kids that she was watching were parents that were trying to do the same thing she was doing. Get ahead in life. They just need a little help, someone to watch their kids. And she looked great, and she was smiling, and she was laughing, and she was happy, and she showed me pictures of her grandchildren and walked me around her new car that she was so proud of. It was a good day. It was a good day. Can I get an amen to that?